Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Animal rights, you know, it's something that we probably don't think about a whole lot until we bump up against them in probably peculiar ways. We got an organization that we'll talk with today. Mindy Patterson is with the Calvary Group, and they have long been in the fight to preserve our rights and animals' rights as well. And right now, there's a lot to talk about and dig through because we have been a pretty free, litigious society, and that's kind of a breaking point. I mean, we put these things in the courts, and then hopefully what we come out with are laws and regulations or policies. At least we're aiming in the right direction to have freedom of choice in this country. Mindy Patterson, will be with us today from the Calvary Group to talk all about that. We're going to dig into a lot of things that I have really very little knowledge about, because like I was saying, it seems like animal rights is something that's maybe a little bit specialized, or we think like we have a general knowledge of things, but there are things going on here, and if we're not paying attention, you know, we're going to lose some of these rights. And then it's not just losing this right, that weakens the chain for all those protections that we have for freedom of choice, that we love and protect in this country. Mindy Patterson is with us, president and co-founder of the Calvary Group. That's a national advocacy and lobbying organization. They do a lot of constitutional work and private property rights, and joins us now for ahead of this Montana AgriWomen meeting. You're going to be speaking at that. Good morning, Mindy. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty well for a Monday. How are you?
Right. I'm doing good. We got some flurries, and I have a real sense of winter coming on here in Montana, snow in the upper elevations and things like that, but doing good. And I'm glad to be here talking about these things. So as I'm out there just, pontificating, it does seem like animal rights is one of those things that just goes under the radar. And you have seen, I think, a long history of activism in this. You've seen a lot of those rights kind of being chipped away at. Talk about that.
Very much so. Animal rights is a political agenda that's been incrementally advancing an animal abolition campaign over the last 70 years by altering Americans' view about animal ownership and animal use through our media, through our schools and universities, through legislation, even through litigation. But make no mistake, their goal is to end the use of animals in every capacity, from the pet on your lap to the steak on your plate, and it's very concerning. They use their weapon of choice is legislation, and most people, most Americans, unfortunately, don't pay attention to what's going on in their state house, even in Congress, or most importantly, in their own backyard, in their city councils, county councils, planning and zoning, and that's where these animal rights extreme groups are advancing legislation to tighten the noose on people who own, raise, and breed and work with animals. And that includes our food producers. And so under the guise of animal welfare, it has nothing to do with animal welfare, but that's their smokescreen that they use. They impart this notion that there's animal cruelty in every corner across America, when, despite the fact that we already have laws on the books to tackle animal cruelty and abuse, and it's already a felony in all 50 states, but they keep piling on with new rules, new laws, to basically, it's all incremental, but it's their goal is to put everybody out of business so we're no longer eating, owning, keeping, breeding animals.
Who is the they? Who is the they in this conversation?
This they is the animal rights groups. So, namely, the Humane Society of the United States, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, the ASPCA, Animal Wellness Institute. There are many, many splinter groups that are a part of these larger organizations. They're all nonprofit groups that say they're out there to help animals and increase welfare for animals, but all they do is take people's money and then they use it to pay lawyers and lobbyists.
So there, as you noted here, and I appreciate that. I mean, I'm just trying to kind of balance this out a little bit. The goal is to end the use of animals. How you've probably come to that conclusion by peering through some things. I don't hear them say, well, I guess some will say outright, but they're always, as you noted, kind of covertly trying to achieve something else in that regard. The goal to end the use of animals. I mean, how known is that, and what a bold kind of statement too.
It's very bold. These groups and their leaders write books about it. It's well known that John Goodwin, who is the grassroots coordinator for the Humane Society of the United States, which is the national group, he has said many times that his goal is the abolition of all animal agriculture. Mm-hmm. They don't like any animals in confinement. They don't like animals being farmed. They don't like us eating animals. This is truly a vegan agenda. They don't even want us owning pets. They have said out loud that owning a pet is equal to slavery. So it's really important to understand the roots of the animal rights movement, and it all goes back many years to its founding with Peter Singer, who is heralds from New Zealand, but Peter Singer is sort of the father of the animal rights movement here in the United States, and he is a very radical thinking individual who does not. He basically wants us to stop eating meat altogether and owning animals. And he was part of the Obama administration. I don't know if you remember him, but mm-hmm. he had some pretty radical ideas when it came to constructing Obamacare and its framework. He was chiming in. Here's the bottom line. Whether it's Peter Singer or whoever these groups are, the animal rights ideology diminishes the sanctity of human life. It's really anti-human. Even though the animals are at the forefront, it's really an anti-human agenda, because a lot of these policies are, like I say, tightening the noose on the production of our farmers and ranchers, and, less food, less producers, control the food, control the people. This is their agenda, and they believe that animal ownership is akin to slavery. It's crazy, but it's all out there in their own words.
Yeah, it is. And I so much appreciate that. And I wanted to have that laid down a little bit, because we know who that group is, so to speak. Mindy Patterson is with us, president and co-founder of the Calvary Group. And that's, again, as I mentioned, a national advocacy and lobbying organization, a lot of constitutional law, a lot of mm-hmm. legislative reform and forums. Who then is in opposition? How long do you feel that this group has kind of had control of the courts? What is this pushback? And then we'll get into some specific cases and some things that you have noted and been following as well. But so there we are. This is the group that's trying to, as you would say, and they claim, to end the use of animals. How long have they been doing this? How hard is the pushback going to need to be?
The pushback has to be extremely, extremely hard. During state legislative sessions, the animal rights groups, as I said earlier, all that fundraising they do, when you see those ASPCA and HSUS commercials online and on television, they take that money and they spend less than 1% on helping animals in shelters. So let's be very clear about that. They don't use the money as they say they will yeah. when they raise it. So all of those, including myself, we all love animals. All those well-intended animal lovers out there are unfortunately being betrayed by these groups. And people open up their checkbooks and spend, the monthly fees to donate to these organizations, and they turn around and spend it on lobbyists and lawyers. And I see these lobbyists in the State House, in Congress, even at the local level. They are introducing legislation all across the country. They've done it in Montana. They've done it in all 50 states, honestly. The Calvary Group advocates for our members. We're a member-based company. We represent animal owners and animal-related businesses, including farmers and ranchers and horse-drawn carriage companies, people in the rodeo, zoos, you name it. And so we're out there advocating for our members in the state legislature, I should say state legislatures, and in Congress, pushing back against this very deceptive legislation. All of it is very deceptive. It'll sound like it's going to be a bill that will end animal cruelty, but on page 15 of their bill, you realize that it has nothing to do with animal cruelty at all. It has everything to do with chipping away and eroding our right to due process, because a lot of the bills that they push want to allow for confiscation of somebody's personal pet or their animals without having to get a witnessed affidavit or have probable cause to go onto somebody's land or their property to take their animals under the auspices of animal cruelty. But that can be a very subjective opinion. And if people are in bed with the animal rights groups and they have nefarious intentions to put somebody out of business, look, I realize that there are people, there are bad apples out there. So, but we already have laws on the books to regulate and correct those bad operators. So they're not after stopping the bad operators. They want everybody gone. So that's why they push deceptive legislation, like I speak of.
And give me an example of what would be a deceptive. And those were fine examples, because you're right. That stuff gets buried, like you say, confiscation, just the erosion of rights in little ways. And then once those get sort of cemented in, there's a bigger foundation of erosion of rights built upon that. So give us a little example of that, and then we'll take a break and get into that a little bit more.
Sure. I'll give you two quick examples. In 2010, the Humane Society of the United States came to our state of Missouri, where we were living at the time, with a ballot initiative called the Puppy Mill Cruelty Prevention Act. Well, none of us support puppy mills, but when you read the bill, it's all about the definitions. The definition of pet was any domesticated animal living near or around the home. Mm. So that could be a cow, a pig, a chicken. They were coming after animal agriculture. All of these bills that the Humane Society of the United States and PETA and Animal Wellness Institute and the ASPCA, all these bills that they push is all about getting their toe in the door to set a precedent to come for more. And that's what that was all about. That was in 2010 in the state of Missouri. And in recent years, we have been fighting everything from, similar legislation to that at the local and state level. And another example is in Dallas, Texas, and San Antonio, Texas, of all places, they have been pushing local bans on horse-drawn carriages. And these operations are very highly regulated. They have regular unannounced veterinary inspections. These horses live like royalty.
Yeah.
Honestly, they live better than most people do. Interestingly, the city council in both of those cities, Dallas and San Antonio, would not go and visit the stables. So, you know, they want to ban something that they know nothing about. And these lawmakers become the judge, the jury, and the executioner of your lawful business. And, you know, it just becomes this fight on subjective opinions between animal rights groups and their pressure on lawmakers. That's really what it's been. That's really what we have learned and faced over the years in fighting all this legislative battle. You know, these animal rights groups have very deep pockets, and they make handsome donations to lawmakers to do their bidding.
And subjective opinions, that's politics,
is
what it is. And so they're so full of politics now, like you say, the San Antonio councils and a lot of other councils out there. You know, I want to come back and talk about this fight and how it's taking place, because you know, it's going to happen at a national level, but you're talking about also little micro levels too, in each state, in each community, and that's a lot to defend. Defending private property rights, it's always a battle in this country. Hopefully, we're getting on the right side of it. We're having a conversation with Mindy Patterson. She is president and co-founder of the Calvary Group, and we're talking about these rising threats to animal ownership and rural property rights. Got a couple of stories to share with you here in just a little bit that kind of really cement this home, too. Just recently, some things that I have come across. Mindy, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate that. You're going to be a keynote speaker at the Montana AgriWomen mid-year meeting. And I want to talk about that a little bit, too, because the Montana AgriWomen, I think that's... Oh, I'm not sure how long they've been around. It's two, three decades. They're part of that American AgriWomen program as well, mtagriwomen.com. But they're, talk about what your, well, I want to know who you are too, the Calvary Group, why you're there, but also sure. Your connection and what you want to impart to the Montana AgriWomen meeting here this weekend.
Well, I'm excited about this meeting in Billings. And incidentally, Montana AgriWomen is celebrating their 30th anniversary.
That's right.
So the
Thank
name
you.
Of the event is Hearts in the Harvest, and it's taking place at the Billings Courtyard Marriott. And it's both Friday night, October 17th. There's a reception that is taking place at the Imagine Studios in the evening. And then on the next day, on October 18th, is the main event. And myself and a colleague by the name of Debbie Bacigalupi, who is a expert on sustainable development and what it means for farming, ranching, and land ownership, is also a very engaging speaker. She is phenomenal. I consider her one of the top experts on private property issues across the U.S., and so we're really excited to be in Montana. I'm very excited. And as far as the Calvary Group goes, we're in our 16th year of existing. We are a national leader in advocating for and defending the constitutional and private property rights of law-abiding animal owners and animal-related businesses. We're a member-based company. We have members in the 48 continental states, from cattle ranchers, sheep farmers, zoos, people in the pet industry, you name it. And if you raise, breed, or work with animals, we have been fighting hard legislatively. We do have a legal component to our membership. We provide access to lawyers who understand the fight, if you will, if people need lawyers. And that's hard to find, because the animal rights groups have a lot of attorneys.
Yeah.
And if you were to just Google search animal law attorney, you would likely end up with somebody who wants to doesn't necessarily want to protect your business. So we're out there every day slogging at the local, state, and federal level on behalf of our members.
Yeah, and I want to get to that too. Here's a couple of about that fight, how it's so broad. I mean, it happens in all of these places here, so it's tough. And I know people got to be on the spot for these things as well. A couple of stories that I came across. One was a case in Montana where some new owners moved into an area. They had more means than the neighbors around, so to speak. So they put up more expensive stables and more high dollar operations. And then they start complaining about their neighbors who are unable to match their wealth. And that's a summary in my mind. But so they file a complaint that their neighbors are not taking care of their animals correctly, while the truth of the matter is, that's how it's done without violation around here. Another case came out of California where they're studying, actually there's a group to propose to mandate the sale of farmland to the state. So producers who are looking to sell, or you know what happens to this too, they go, well, maybe you're not looking to sell, but it's time for you to sell, says the state. And you're going to sell to us for this amount of money. That is actually on paper a proposal in California, the crazy place that it is. It's out there, Mindy. Maybe comment on that, but just how the fight has to really be eyes wide open.
Legislation is ground zero to protecting your rights and your property. So people need to make sure that you pay attention to what is being introduced at the local and state level, especially. I know what you're referring to in California. Governor Newsom basically has organized a state agriculture land equity task force, and they're basically advising on addressing historical land ownership inequities. He's just taking it out there with this broad brushstroke that, decades or hundreds of years ago that, you know, land was purchased without equity in mind to the purchaser. Very odd. I mean, anyway, the thing that's bad about this is that this is all going to set a precedent for other states. And there are other states that are very much in the crosshairs right now that have adopted a lot of the policies that California, Gavin Newsom, and Jerry Brown have introduced. And like I have said, what happens in California, unfortunately, doesn't stay in California. People who move out of the state who complain about it, and then they take their terrible policy ideas with them, and it's spread like wildfire. Colorado is in trouble. Nevada, same. Washington, Oregon. Believe it or not, the state of Texas is a patchwork of terrible municipal laws that are happening at the local level in places like Dallas and San Antonio and Houston. I mean, if you live in a blue city, it's likely that you're going to be facing some of these very onerous and terrible laws that want to push you off the land. That's the whole plan, is to push us off the land, and it's all about setting a precedent to come for more.
There's a couple of key cases out there too I want to get more information on, but there's also a series of nice articles that you've written regarding the Sustains Act, what that is, public-private partnerships. You've got some warnings about that. And then you also get into the area of renewable energy. And I have said it's an irrational rush to it, and I think we're paying some consequences for it. We got like about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes here before we take a hard break. Set us up for what we're going to be talking about next.
Well, the Sustains Act is very concerning. And unfortunately, President Trump has not rolled that back. But there is federal legislation that was introduced by Congresswoman Harriet Hageman from Wyoming to roll it back. It's not moving forward at as fast a clip as we'd like, but we have hope that in the second half of this Congress, we may make some headway.
What's it for? What's it intended to do?
Well, she has two things, to eliminate public-private partnerships and also to eliminate the Sustains Act. The Sustains Act passed in the dark of night in December of 2022 as an amendment to the Consolidated Appropriations Act for 2023. So it was a rider. And very surprisingly, it was the main sponsor was Representative Glenn Thompson, who is currently the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee and a Republican, that carried this legislation. And then there were five co-sponsors, all Republicans, who I don't, you know, I get along with them all very well, but I don't think they really read the bill or the precedent that it set, which is extremely bad for agriculture, for private property use, for land ownership. But the main byline for the Sustains Act is public-private partnerships and allowing for that. And what public-private partnerships are, it's very important because this has become a tool that is being used frequently in legislation. It allows for non-governmental organizations or NGOs to write big fat checks to regulatory agencies. And in this case, it would be the Natural Resources Conservation Service under USDA to basically advance the Sustains Act, which basically wants to provide subsidies for farmers and ranchers to sign on with conservation easements to open up their land for CO2 pipelines.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate that. How's your pet today? Right? Right there. Right there. Part of the family. Well, we're talking about organizations out here that think that that is wrong for you not to love your animal. You should love the animals. But to call that animal, whatever, Charlie, your pet. I don't know, but that's what the whole idea is here. But when we look at, I was just thinking here, Mindy Patterson is with us, and she's with the Cavalry Group, and we're talking about defending private property rights and animal rights. She's been doing that for decades here. Just about how many pets there are. 94 million households own at least one pet. There are some 89 million pet dogs out there, birds. 20 million, I mean, is the Humane Society against me owning a goldfish? Yes, they are. And that's hard for us to accept, I think, in a lot of ways. Mindy Patterson, again, with the Calvary Group. It is thecalvarygroup.com. Mindy, thanks for being here. I guess I get, as I spoke earlier, you know, not a lot of, maybe some general knowledge, but not a lot of specific knowledge that the general public has about animal rights. I know there's conflict here and there, but the magnitude of it seems to have changed over the years. And I appreciate that there is a pushback. And I want to talk about who's organizing that pushback. But let's go back into what we are pushing back against. The Sustains Act, it was passed, as you noted, December 2022 as a rider on an omnibus bill. All right.
Yes. Yes.
And that's so dangerous. And Democrats are trying to do that again. But talk more about that. What are we concerned with?
The Sustains Act basically empowers USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service, which is a department under the USDA umbrella, to accept public-private partnerships or private contributions, basically to support what they consider to be conservation programs. Now, conservation is a term that's been hijacked by the environmental groups, and they are saying that everything is about conservation. We need to conserve land. But what they're really doing is stealing private property and putting it into the government's hands and or other private holders, thinking that it's basically addressing the aim is to address climate change, carbon sequestration, wildlife habitat improvement, water holdings. They're usurping water holdings too, all over the West currently, which is really frightening. That if you own the land, you should also own the water on your land. But now, as you know, state by state, they've been forming these water boards. This all plays into the Sustains Act. But anyway, what this means is that wealthy corporations and special interest groups and environmental extremists now have a seat at the table in shaping how landowners manage their property. And the Sustains Act allows these groups in a pay-to-play fashion to usurp land ownership and influence our federal regulatory programs. And it's just very, very dangerous. These public-private partnerships, we need to head that off at the pass. We should not. The thing that's the most frightening to us about public-private partnerships is that the onus is on us as American citizens to find out who these groups are that are writing big fat checks to government agencies. I mean, what happened to government transparency? There is none in this particular case. You would have to submit a Freedom of Information Act to find out who the NRCS or other divisions under USDA have been writing, you know, donations and big money to these government regulatory agencies that are tasked with overseeing landowners and producers. And not to hit on an all-new topic, but one of the concerns for cattle ranchers that we have is when the radio frequency identification system passed, also, by the way, did not pass through Congress knowingly. They didn't have a committee hearing to have vigorous debate and discuss. It was amended to another bill and passed in the dark of night last spring. And what that is, a new animal ID system for cattle ranchers that is required to be monitored by the USDA. And what's concerning about that is that it creates a new database at USDA, which will be open to FOIA requests. So if you get environmental people that want to see how much land and how many cows a cattle rancher has, that could be problematic. It basically is all for nefarious purposes. I mean, we could go down that rabbit hole, but it really is concerning. And we face that every day at the Calvary Group because a lot of our members are licensed by USDA and required to be licensed by USDA to engage in commerce with their animals, whether it's the pet industry or zoos or animal exhibitors. And we face every month, our attorneys write letters constantly to USDA to block FOIA requests of private information that is held by licensees at USDA. So now the cattle ranchers are going to be subject to that potentially under this RFID system that is now under the purview of USDA.
Yeah, it sounds like it's full on here. You know, I've liked public-private partnerships at the local level.
Right.
And I think there's a place for them too, but NGOs, and we've seen some real abuse from these NGOs or non-governmental organizations. We've seen some real abuse, especially in that previous administration with that. So it's you're spot on here. Let's take this call. Nancy's listening in Roundup, wants to add to the conversation. She's got some experience in the good old state of Montana as well, I'm sure, with horses and animals. Good morning, Nancy. Thanks for joining us here. You're on with Mindy Patterson.
Well, good morning. Good morning, Mindy. I think what we're talking about here, too, is that this New World Order, the globalists, the Bilderberg Group, it's their agenda, their plan to make us all one world order and a 15-minute city society where everything is done for us. We use bicycles, artificial meat grown in labs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very, very dire subject, and this is what they're doing. I believe, the like Tom said, the NGOs. But Bozeman has plans for a 15-minute city. It's a five-story building that's being planned to be built. It's got like a parking for 900 bicycles and retail space for like 2,200 feet. And you live and work in the same building. And I think what you're talking about is we're starting to see the beginning of it in the United States. And it is worldwide. So, Mindy, thank you so much for bringing this up because I think a lot of people are in the dark. I mean, this sounds like something out of a horror movie that Hollywood would make. You know, like it's not real, but it is real and it's happening. So, thank you so much, and that's my input today.
Nancy, thanks.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I just want to add to that too. I mean. You would take those calls in the past and you would go, oh, that person is a conspiracy theorist. Well, but not anymore. We have seen this. They're pretty much wide open with their agenda because they've been discovered about it. I mean, and I'm talking about the World Economic Forum and, yep, and the Bilderberg Group and you know, that those used to be, oh, that's just crazy talk. It's not anymore. Tell me about that. I mean, how well do we know this? How well do we know the enemy, so to speak? And I hate to use those terms, but how well do we know that adversary?
All we have to do is go to the UN website and click on sustainable development or sustainable agriculture, and they put everything out there. This is not a made-up theory. We have been working to educate people all over the country about Agenda 2030 and sustainable development for a very long time. And here we are. And a lot of people are finally waking up and realizing that it's not a conspiracy theory. And thanks to President Trump, quite frankly, he has brought into the spotlight the fact that all of this is being driven by the United Nations. And I still have hope. I mean, a lot of this would completely disappear if we disengaged from the UN. And I know that there are theories out there that would be a terrible idea for other reasons, but honestly, that would just make a lot of these problems go away. But your caller brought up a very important point with these 15-minute cities and the fact that this is all a part of the sustainable development that's going on all over the country, and that's the roadmap. And it really is an attack on rural America and our rural economies. You know, we like to eat, even if you live in an urban area and you don't, or suburban even, and you don't work the land, everybody has to go to the grocery store, but it wouldn't take more than 2 days for the shelves to empty out if something catastrophic happened to our farmers and ranchers. Yeah. It is a very tumultuous roller coaster for our producers across the country on a good day. And so when the noose continues to tighten on our producers, we should be cherishing our farmers and ranchers. You know, they make up in population less than 1.5% of our U.S. population is made up of farmers and ranchers. That's remarkable. And they feed us and the world. And we need to continue to support and cherish our farmers and ranchers across the U.S., and you can do that by showing up and paying attention to legislation at the local and state level and being able to recognize the counterfeit, if you will, that a lot of these bills that are being presented by people that want to rewild or take things backwards and have us living in yurts with no electricity, you know, Gavin Newsom is an example, not to just always pick on California, but they're currently dismantling aquifers and all the, you know, ability to hold water in the state of California, which is basically shutting off the faucet to people who grow our food. Why would we be doing that? I never thought I would live to see the day where we have our own government and our state lawmakers are working to destroy our farmers and ranchers, but it is happening.
Yeah, and I appreciate the advocacy about that as well. Mindy Patterson is with us, the Calvary Group. We'll take a break and come on back. I mean, you know, the ideas of sustainability are valid and good to work toward. But if the farmers are not at the table, then they're on the table, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yes. And it can't be done. It can't be mandated. It can't be done in dark circles. Mindy Patterson with us. Mindy, there's a lot of stuff being thrown out there right now. I think these liberal organizations are worried. The courts are going to hopefully get right-sided, in my mind. I think they're very, very leftist. And so we're seeing a rash of a lot of legislation in this regard or proposals. What is one legislative note that you'd like to see pushed out there that can, or maybe a couple of them?
Well, you're right. They've doubled down. Yeah. The left has definitely doubled down. But we need to go on offense. I don't like playing defense. I feel like all we do is play defense on our side. And one of the things we've done at the Calvary Group is go on offense. We've written our own legislation, one of which is called the Working Animal Protection Act. It's passed in Oklahoma and Arkansas and a version of it in Texas to protect lawful animal enterprise from being legislatively banned by city councils and county commissions. So we have that that's slated to be introduced in the 2026 state legislative sessions next year.
In Montana? So is somebody carrying that in Montana?
We introduced it in Montana a couple years ago, and I'm hopeful that maybe this in 2026 we'll have it back. But we really need to go on offense. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to do that legislatively. Talk, and people need to get to know their state representative and their state senator. Get to know your lawmakers, even, you know, at the congressional level. Engage at the local, state, and federal levels with your lawmakers and pay attention to what's going on legislatively, because it really is ground zero to protecting your rights.
What's in there? What are a couple of key concepts? We're running out of time, but what are a couple of key concepts in there?
In our bill?
Yeah.
It's very simple. It's like four lines. It basically says that local municipalities cannot outright ban a lawful business that utilizes working animals in entertainment, education, transportation, and agritourism. Mm. So they're working, and they have successfully banned the exhibition of animals in several counties and cities across the country. Can you believe? Imagine going to the fair and there being no animals, and you're not allowed to exhibit your animals. People don't go to the fair just for the waffle cones, you know.
Some do.
Corn dogs.
Some do. Yeah.
We really need to think strategically, legislatively,
yeah,
and head some of this stuff off at the pass, because a lot of these groups are very predictable in what they want to do. But there's a huge difference between animal rights and animal welfare, and I urge your members to go to our website at thecavalrygroup.com, and it's spelled like the military infantry, not the church. Look at the Take Action tab throughout the year. We track state legislation all over the country. We're also tracking federal legislation, and we provide email campaigns to make it really easy for people to send letters to and emails to your lawmakers.
Mindy, great stuff. I'm going to throw out just one last plug here. It is open to the public, the Montana Agri Women Mid-Year Meeting. It starts this Friday, the 17th, and continues on into Saturday. Go to mtagriwomen.com for more information. And Mindy will be speaking there. Mindy, there's a lot to cover. Thank you so much. Thanks for getting our eyes open on it. And we'll be chatting with you down the road. Okay, ma'am?
Look forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.